Name, Jason Horsley. Profession, Liminalist. This is The Liminalist, the podcast in between. You are now listening. You can walk an island way and you work all the door in dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
I came walking a long way, just for another chap. Then I saw her in the crowd and I looked her in the eyes.
I know your new show is trying to really touch on this idea of the space in between. And, you know, I feel like there's so many ways we could go with this, but I feel like even this, I think you and I are similar. I'm hesitant to say that, mostly for your sake, not mine, but you sort of disappear. As an observer of your work, it seems like you disappear offline for certain lengths of time and you come back full force. You know, you'll have a new, brand new website, brand new podcast. You're suddenly everywhere for a few months. And then suddenly you say, okay, closing up shop. Screw all of you. Taking my ball, going home. And we don't see you for a while. Mm-hmm. And, I'm very similar. I don't, you know, for probably different reasons, or again, I don't want to presume to know your situation, but I, due to like financial realities, basically what happens is I put all the energy that I possibly can into getting a project done, you know, putting out a sync book or redoing a website or, you know, whatever major undertaking I'm trying to handle, and I throw everything that I possibly can into it while my finances slip further and further and further into the red until I absolutely have to do something about it. And then I suddenly will disappear from the internet and have to work every available hour that I could possibly get at a job and work like crazy until I can not only get myself out of debt and then save up some money so I can do it all over again. Basically, I guess I wanted to sort of ask you, for me, this is a sort of, again, maybe not the healthiest form of it, but it's a sort of extreme liminalism in that it's the only way I've found to find balance between the artistic life and the practical life of not being homeless is to sort of alternate between the two.
I don't know how parallel it is. I mean, obviously I can see the parallels you're pointing out, and it does seem it might look that way to an observer that I withdraw. I mean, the time that's going to mind when I did withdraw consciously and deliberately and strategically was after Stormy Weather, and I'm kind of revisiting that time mentally because I'm starting a new podcast, and this kind of feels like the first podcast since Stormy Weather, even though I had obviously the several podcasts after Stormy Weather that were, it was almost as though they were Stormy Weather's backwash or whatever the expression is. Like I couldn't quite quit podcasting because I consciously chose to stop Stormy Weather, as I remember, because I felt it was getting popular. And I'm really questioning that now, like, what on earth was I doing? Why did I do that? And, you know, because now I feel frustrated starting something completely new, and that it's, I feel like I'm not, there isn't much interest out there, so I'm having those patterns triggered, basic primal patterns, you know, infant in the crib, making a noise and no response, oh my god, panic. I go through that regularly, and it seems like I do put myself through that, and as some sort of psychological reenactment process that I'm becoming more conscious of. And one of the ways I do that unconsciously is what you've observed, is I will build something and then I'll dismantle it. And it's funny you said fuck you all, because as in you're imagining me saying that, because when I want to say fuck you all is not at the time of dismantling, but at the time of beginning something. That's how I feel now doing the liminalist. I'm feeling fuck you all because I'm not aware of a response. I'm not getting the echo that lets me know that there's people out there. But when I took down Stormy Weather, it was more to do with me and just the feeling of, I don't think I want this. I don't think I want an established platform, a following. It's difficult for me to actually remember the exact thought process that I went through, but I do recall swimming in the pool, realizing that I had to end Stormy Weather, and thinking, oh God, does that mean I have to take all the podcasts down? Should I erase everything? And I think this is a somewhat compulsive thing of like wanting to disappear.
I get that more than you might know. I mean,
yeah.
I think there's this weird thing that comes with, obviously we have some sort of desire for fill in the blank, you know, is it some sort of validation, acceptance, attention,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, right? And at the same time, it's like being so, in one respect, like, you know, anti-authority, plus we have our, like, you know, sort of own bullshit pretensions around it of, I know if, I mean, you look around, particularly alternative research field, but I mean, it's probably, at this point, it's true with a sort of hipster mindset that's pervaded everything of, once somebody has, quote unquote, made it, they've lost all credibility, right? Like I said, it's so apparent, so apparent that something happens, a flip happens in the public's eye, let alone in the person's eye. And so there's that, it's almost like this dance of getting as close to that line as possible to maximize your validation, attention, et cetera, without crossing over the line and feeling like either you've sold out, or you've become a commodity, or that people are going to perceive you as if you have.
While you're talking, I'm thinking of that expression, "If it ain't broke, don't fix it." And that my feeling here is almost that I take the opposite of approach, which is if it's working, break it. And that what you're describing here, that there's something underneath that's subtler and more insidious than just being established and having a following, and we all know that the whole notion of selling out and whatnot, but I think that can be avoided. There are artists who are successful and they keep changing and growing, at least for a period, and that I think it's like you're talking about. I mean, you nailed it with the validation, attention, I can't remember what the third thing you said was, but they're all accurate. That if you're trying to get that by having a creative input, by sending out messages, you're trying to get the validation and the acceptance and the appreciation that you want, that you feel that you need to feel safe and secure in your own identity, and you find something that works, then the tendency is just stick with it, don't change it, because this is it. Now I'm finally getting what I wanted. But of course, that's kind of like because it's the infant part of us that is not. I mean, it's a fragment, it's a tulpa, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a real baby. You can't just feed it and then leave it, and it will grow up and become a man. It's voracious. It will never get enough. This is my sense over and over again with my experience of this, the validation, that if you find something that works, then and then you stick with it, you will still, it will never really work, because you'll still, you'll keep wanting more, and so then you'll keep kind of refining that technique or that strategy or that method of communication that you've come up with in order to get more and more of the thing that you're getting, to feed that hungry monster, that hungry ghost.
Yeah, I like that you called it a tulpa, because I don't know, at least for myself, it doesn't feel, I'm totally, you know, self-aware enough to know that obviously it's a part of me that wants the attention, validation, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't actually feel that in any visceral sense in my own day. What I feel is the creation is the hungry thing.
Mm.
you know, I built something that got much bigger than me and demands a ton out of me. I did the first sync book 2011, right? I was basically, so it was 2010 that I worked on it, or at least 2011. Anyway, I was a guy who started a blog, and I think 2009, I was aware of these different blogs. I was really interested in them, and I was like wondering why this wasn't more popular, more well known. I was really, really, really turned on to what was being done within the sort of synchromystic corner of the internet, right? And wondering why isn't this out there? And I thought, you know, okay, we could put a book together, we'd do different things. But then suddenly, I think stepping into that role, people saw, sort of treating me as if I was something of a leader or a mm-hmm. Some sort of authority. And I mean, I'm an anarchist. I'm about as strict as an anti-authoritarian as you can get. And it scared me, to be quite honest. And so that sort of self-destructive intention is there for me, is like, I don't want to be the ruler. I want to destroy the kingdom. You know, I want to destroy that seat. At the same time, I do want the kingdom to flourish. And juggling that strange mix of emotions and intellectual concepts has been a real challenge. But I mean, so right away, like I said, I was barely scratching the surface of the synchromistic genre, and I'm getting, you know, emails. Goro Adachi, whose work I love Goro to death. He contacted me saying, "Hey, Jake." So, you know, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the Goro Adachi, Jake Katsa sort of history. He was like, "I'm not comfortable with Jake being, you know, why does Jake get to be continue to be highlighted? Don't you know this history?" The truth is, I didn't know the history at the time it was presented to me. I'm like, I don't really know how to handle this at this moment, and I don't know the truth of it. I don't know the veracity of the claims. I don't really know, and it's not really my plate. I'm very sorry that you guys had this falling out. I don't really know what to do with it. You know, I'm just kind of, what the hell is happening here? So at first, it was a really hard thing to juggle. Then very shortly after that, you know, sort of realizing there's this guy, Kyle Hunt, who did Star Theory. He becomes like a full-out white supremacist Nazi douchebag. And I'm like, oh, my God, now I published a fucking Nazi. Like, what do I, you know, all these things that sort of come into play.
I didn't know that. Is he in the first book?
He's in the first book, yeah.
So that's the chapter I will read now, because that's the kind of guy I am. I'm like, oh, that makes the whole thing much more interesting.
Have you heard of the White Man March, or Million White, I don't know, whatever the fuck it is?
No.
He made national headlines. My web traffic suddenly started swelling, and I'm like, what the hell is happening? And I'm looking, I see all these search terms for Kyle Hunt. Dude made national headlines organizing some white supremacy movement. And I'm like, holy shit, what do I do about that? You know, So there's things from the like small scale people having conflicts, and then the large scale. Okay, am I, you know? So anyway, so then I had other people contact me. So from SyncBook 2, I had someone contact me saying, if you don't take Kyle Hunt out of the book, you have to republish it, taking him out of the book because now he's an established Nazi. You have to take him out because I don't want to be affiliated with his Nazism.
Right.
And, you know, so like it just becomes this sort of political juggling. I'm like, this isn't all I really wanted to do was promote an art form. so that's why I say it's the beast that's hungry. It's, I think there's few people out there that would have a sense of how much work this is to maintain, besides maybe yourself. Like I know you maintained a podcast, you've managed these different websites, you've interviewed all these people, you've been writing for different outlets. You have a sense of it's a full-time undertaking to, if not more so to keep feeding that beast. Once you start throwing other people's wants and personalities and stuff in there, it gets a little harder.
Well, I haven't had a parallel experience, or at least it's been a while. I'd have to cast my mind back to think of one where what you're describing, where something I create or co-create becomes bigger than me and then just maintaining it. I mean, Sweater was a little bit like that. I think there was a period where it was taking up all my time. Fortunately, it was paying my way as well. But it didn't, even that wasn't to the extent where I had to turn people away or I felt like it was more than I could manage. When I ended Sweater, it wasn't related to that. It was related, similar to when I ended Stormy Weather, was am I trustworthy?
Mm-hmm.
Am I trustworthy to play this role? And the answer was no. I was just aware that I was getting off on it, that it was feeding my ego, and that that was not, I mean, that was a responsibility that would ripple down onto others who were following quote unquote me. But in terms of even just myself, my own healthy growth as an individual, it was going to be detrimental. I just sensed that very much so. But anyway, all what you're saying is very interesting. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. And a lot of thoughts have been firing off. I mean, the fact is that it is political. Everything's political, they say, and I think that that's largely true. And if you're involved in a creative enterprise that brings people together, that has a semblance of a movement, that synchromysticism has a semblance of a movement, even though you put the disclaimer in the first book, this isn't that, this isn't this, it's just individuals. Still, it, you know, the alternate perceptions community itself is similar to a movement, as in it's a loose-knit group of people, of individuals who are pushing their own perceptions on the world. I was going to say agendas, but this is where it gets blurry. And, you know, I I have this saying, whatever you want to call it, that, or maybe I read it somewhere, I don't remember, but that you could end the whole civilization and just take half a dozen people and put them on an island together to build up a community, and they would build the exact same civilization that we're stuck in now, eventually, because they would take with them their egos. And whatever the ego is, and we could spend hours getting into that, but it's something that, it's not a team player, it's competitive. Let's just bring it down to that. I was actually questioning to myself today before I spoke to you, like, why do I feel a certain amount of opposition to what you're doing, Alan, to the Synco thing? What is that about? And I came down to, well, it's a competitive thing, there's something competitive in me, particularly when I see younger guys doing stuff that maybe I've done in the past or that's close enough and having some degree of success. Some part of me feels competitive about that. Not a part that I'm proud of or that I want to nurture.
Absolutely. But it's there. No, there's no hard feelings whatsoever, because I get that. I mean, I think I contacted you because, see, to me, again, this might could be my own fucked up mentality, but it's almost like when you say agendas, is it agendas, interests, how do you separate those? As you said, it's all political. So to me, the only way to kind of ensure that one agenda doesn't overcome all the others is almost to be not to play people against each other. Ooh, you know, that's a slippery slope, right? But if you understand what I'm saying here, is like, okay, someone says, hey, you can't have the guy who turned into a white supremacist. I said, no, I'm leaving him in the book. I'm not, there's nothing in his chapter that talks about white supremacy or anti-Jew or anything like that. He's talking about correlations between the rainbow and the alphabet and numbers, and it's a sort of like gematria sort of correlation, right? I take no issue with anything he wrote there as being offensive or whatever. But there's also the idea of once I begin to censor, I don't agree with this person. Hell, I don't agree with any of you people. So I'm not going to start taking someone out because I don't agree with something else in their personal life. I feel like the only way for me to ensure that one agenda doesn't become, you know, like the Jake Kotze. I think Jake's a hell of a guy. I got to meet him just for less than a day last summer, and he's human. I questioned it. Sometimes online, it's really hard to get a sense of Jake. Is he a human being or a sort of like Twitter bot? You know, I found a 42. Bling joy. You know, like, is there a personality behind it? Mm-hmm. And I was so happy to find, yeah, he's a real dude. He's actually a really cool guy to hang out with. But the sort of agenda, for lack of a better term, that he puts out is one that I take issue with on, you know, probably 5 days out of the week. Mm-hmm. There are some days where I can totally embrace the, like, hey, we all need more joy, and that seems to be, you know, okay, that's the thing that ties us all together. How wonderful is that? But 5 days out of the week, it seems to me a kind of short-sighted a philosophy. It's, you know, how do I say to the person, you know, the child who just had their house bombed by a drone, don't worry, kid. You know, Robin Tunney's in this movie where she stands next to a rainbow, and that shows that it's all good. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sorry your limbs are on the floor and you're bleeding to death, but, you know, don't worry. Kevin Bacon's going to save the day. Jennifer Aniston will drink ayahuasca and it'll all be better. Like, that feels so fucking cold to me. It feels like the Winnipeg school almost feels heartless. It doesn't feel like it's promoting love. It actually feels heartless. And it's, you might hear it. It's like, it's an emotional thing for me. Mm. I said, I like them as people. I like them as artists. They inspired the fuck out of me. But there's something that feels like it's closing off sympathy, empathy, connection, in the name of connection. And I wanted, as you said, you're someone who, maybe you're a contrarian. You're someone who's gonna, I see it in your work, you know, the way you look for someone that you can kind of try and knock down a few pegs or stand in opposition to. It's how you identify yourself. I don't want to, it's not a 100% of the time, but that's, I think you would agree with that statement, as you were saying.
It's prevalent. Yeah. It's more prevalent than I would like, but it's, yeah.
And I do this, you know, I could do the same thing. Why am I promoting Kotze while at the same time taking a stance against him? You know what? It's like, it's this hard, weird psychological thing. But I wanted you to be more involved because I found, here's someone who's speaking eloquently to this issue. And again, I guess what I'm sort of saying is, like, my liminalism, my middle ground, aside from the more, for a term, psychedelic sort of states of mind, but my, for lack of a term, my political liminalism is by spreading the pieces across the board, avoiding a belief system, and knowing that I succumb. I'm a human being. I'm going to succumb to a belief system. I'm going to, or be pulled towards certain biases. And the only way I feel safe entering this arena is to ensure that I'm almost hedging bets against myself at all times. If I feel like I'm becoming too popular or I'm leaning too much in one direction, I'm going to have somebody on the show or promote somebody that I disagree with strongly to ensure that there's at least a counter voice to what I'm saying. And it's, I can't tell if I'm like schizophrenic, self-destructive, or if there's an intelligent method to the madness.
No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no. No retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside. No retreat in comfort, no, no, no. No retreat in comfort, promise stock telephones. No retreat in comfort, seeing nothing in the zones. No, 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 no. No retreat in comfort, no retreat in comfort. No retreat in comfort, no retreat in comfort. No, no. Swift attacking, no thought for the suffering, but I still believe. Power, greed, lying, the time now screaming, but I still believe. No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, 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 no. Spare me and shame you, this leaden union of jack lights and camp boots through a hail of flags. Be careful who your friends are, no correlation levels within games. Rich leaders, poor nations, what does this freedom mean? No retreat in comfort, west of pacified. No retreat in comfort, no, no. No retreat in comfort, bullets in the broadside.
Well, that, yeah, there's a lot to look at here, hey? I often have this when I'm listening to somebody talk, like there's a lot of connections being made, and then it's a question of which one to focus on. I noticed that you dedicated the first thing, what was it, to your mum?
Mm-hmm.
And you juxtaposed how she said conspiracies are crazy. Oh, she looked at you like you were crazy when you talked about conspiracy. When you talked about sync, she looked at you like you were crazy not to have spotted it before. Right? Is that more or less summation?
That's the basic quote, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because my mother, I haven't called her my mum in years, my mother, who passed in 2010, she didn't really pass down much by way of, you know, upbringing, education or anything like that, ideologies. But one thing that she did say to me when I was pretty young was that there are no accidents or there are no coincidences. And my father was an atheist, so he'd raised, and he had even less to do with raising me, but he certainly imprinted me with his atheism. So I was quite resistant to my mother's view at that time, that there's no such thing as coincidences. Now, of course, I would agree. One of the things I was thinking about before we had this conversation was today was, what have I got against the sink community? This is just trying to reduce it down to kind of a kernel or a nugget. This is my criticism or my question about synchromysticism is, to what extent is it a means to reinforce the illusion that we are living meaningful lives? Like, where is the, if it's all about meaning, where's the futility? Because if everything is meaningful, then what do you contrast that with?
Oh, that's interesting.
So what you said about...
I'll just finish quickly.
But what you said about Jake Kotze is kind of not a million miles from how I feel about synchromysticism in general. There's a danger of irrelevancy. There's a danger of emphasizing a certain aspect of existence at the cost of the other aspect. So bringing it back to the thing, your mother, the dedication, that, and my criticism, Kotze, that you can't leave out conspiracy for if you're going to look into sinks. You can't leave out your own personal neuroses. It's all part of the picture. It's all part of the exploration. So, and you can't leave out futility. The fact that the futility of our existence as egos is what drives us to create in the first place and to find all these things. And so the tendency to actually use this knowledge and this, all of it, just to generate a narrative where futility is banished.
I don't think it's futility is banished. I think it's fighting the futility. You know, you say it's it creates the illusion that we have meaningful lives. I think it's perhaps it's an illusion. I don't think so. I don't actually buy the confirmation bias as the explanation for sync. The synchronicities that I have, you know, I have plenty of small scale, like chuckle worthy syncs, but I have the mind blowing slap in the face synchronicities show me it's not confirmation bias. I go through cycles where I'll say, oh, okay, you know, sync, that was really cool. But I need to, you know, I can't be focused on that. I have some of the same concerns that you raised in Sync Book Volume 2. I worry about some of those same things from time to time. I've had some of those exact same thoughts, so that it's inane. It's chasing imaginary dragons for no reason. But then you get this slap in the face synchronicity that's so powerful that says to me, like, hey, asshole, this is real. And I've had that too many times. You know, and maybe that's self-generated. Maybe that's, again, that's the futility where you're falling into this futility and some part of you as a sort of survival mechanism kicks in and throws some endorphins your way and says, no, don't worry, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, right? Keep on going. Maybe that's all it is. But to me, that's okay. You know, you mentioned my mom, you mentioned your dad. It's like my dad, I did the Sync Book 1. When I spoke to my dad at some point saying, hey, I'm going to do another book, he said, oh, please don't do another thing about that sync stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anything but that. That was his reaction, right? My mom, who I dedicated the book to, she's never read it. She's never read the Sync Book. It's not that she's a mystic in any way. But my mom is, both my parents, they're blue-collar workers. You know, my dad drives a truck. My mom has worked. She worked in a doctor's office. To say, you know, like, it's denying futility. I come from a background where there's, like, I know futility. But, you know, if you see work a dirty job, everyone's fully aware of futility. What's missing is the meaning. You know, the most people have going for them is to get off work and have a few beers. To throw a little fucking magic in there, it's like, I don't think it's granted. I see. Yeah, there's the extremes. There's the extreme. This goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. My liminalism is a balance of extremes. I see this new age, you know, reality sandwich, Daniel Pinchbeck bullshit culture of like, hey, we can throw thousands of dollars to go down to Peru and hang out with Daniel Pinchbeck for a weekend, you know, and oh, it's all connected and it's all in the flow. And yeah, man, it's all great. It's this sort of, you know, super crunchy granola, love and light crowd, which I feel no connection to. I don't want to shit on them in particular, but I feel no connection to them. I feel like, yeah, those can be the extreme of people who are just chasing flights of fancy, where they're to the point of denying the hardship or futility of other parts of the world. But I've also seen so much of people who have nothing, they see no future for themselves. Throwing some meaning in here, I feel like, again, it's like, I do see this really hard extreme of a chunk of the population that is completely ignoring the hardship and seriousness and like groundedness of life that's necessary. And you probably, you know, like, so focusing on the alternative research communities or artist communities or people online, you're not seeing that. You know, you're seeing the one extreme of that. And man, I see it and I get you. You know, here's something. Katza said something once, which I can't help but realize that I'm doing the exact same thing. I think he might have even been when he was interviewed on your show. I could be wrong about that, but Katza said something once where he was talking about conspiracy versus everything being a sort of coincidence, right? And he said, if I see people focusing too much on conspiracy, then I try and talk to them about sync. And if I see people focusing too much on sync, then I try and talk to them about conspiracy. Now, to be honest, I haven't seen him talk about conspiracy in a long time, but this was something that he said that's really struck me, and I do it. I know for a fact I do that. I play contrarian, and it's not to necessarily to be a contrarian. It's to say, this is the part that you seem to be missing. So if I see someone who's just in the like in the dirt of life and struggling with the futility, I want to say, hey, here's some magic. You know, here's some wonder. Here's some meaning to your life to keep on pushing through. All right, I've looked too long and too hard into the abyss to not know what that feels like. But, you know, if the person's just going to get high and watch Jennifer Aniston movies all day long, I want to sort of shake them and say, hey, let's not forget there's a flip side to this, you know, can we balance this out? If there's any legacy that I've sort of taken on, and I don't even didn't do it intentionally, but that's I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being that kind of contrarian.
I think my point about the futility, it might have come off as a bit more of an attack than I meant it to, or a bit more of a criticism even. I'm really meaning it more in a very sort of general sense that if everything becomes about syncs, and what syncs show to us is that synchronicities is that there is a pattern underlying life, the Olympic order, and it's everywhere. So then, once we've discovered that, how often do we need reminding of it? Like, what do syncs actually count for in the end? It just seems to me, I mean, based on my own experience, that a sense of acceptance and of peace and serenity and of even joy, well, that's a very rare thing in my hemisphere, that doesn't require 1,000 syncs a day, and it doesn't require, you know, archetypal correspondences and all the rest of it. Actually, it seems to come from a very subtle signal within, which is just really as simple as to be almost a cliche of just being in one's body, feeling one's feet on the earth, and maybe a breeze that blows at a particular moment. And yeah, there's a little bit of sink in there, and that one is aware that there's a consciousness or a sentience in all things, and one is aware of being part of that. But it's not a heady thing. Whereas the sink thing, and what I say about futility is that it's purely intellectual. I don't believe for a moment that life is futile. That's a contradiction in terms to me, or an oxymoron. But that for the mind, if we allow the mind to do its thing and to work everything out, it will always end up with futility, I think. Because no matter how many sinks you come up with and how great a meaning you map, you still got to put it on the backdrop of the infinite and the eternal, which reduces the most cosmic, grandiose, you know, meaning to nothing. It just annihilates it, right? Really. Because the infinite is the infinite.
Yeah, no, beautifully said, actually.
Lay aside the arm, lay aside the ancient, lay aside the night, lay aside completion, lay aside the course, lay toward me, and lay in the light, and lay aside the hour, just lay aside the hunger. And lay upon me, and lay like before, and lay aside the return, and lay aside eternity, just lay aside the hour, lay aside the lay aside the lay, the range of every day, not being alone. Of the sun ray wandering round home, dimensions of the day, real spool of time, events in space traced along a line. Just lay aside the hour, just lay aside the ancient, lay aside the night, lay aside completion, lay aside the course, lay toward me, and lay in the light, and lay aside the hour, just lay aside the hunger, and lay upon me, and lay like before, and lay aside the return, and lay aside eternity, just lay aside the hour, just lay aside the lay, where me and boredom, and me and the 20th century, me and an entity, and me and my identity, and me and winter, and me and nothing, and me and feeling, and me and something, and me and the perambulation, and me and the navigation, and me and the lotus, and me and boredom, and I sing the words. What other words can I sing? The words of love and not just anything. Oh, the way of my lay, this lay of my say, the way of my lay, the lay of my say. And time ain't what it used to be, the feelings past, strands of memories cast, and time ain't what it used to be. I know it don't last, time minutes to the mast, and time ain't what it used to be. The clock of serendipity, what does it do to me? Time ain't what it used to be. Hey, genealogy, hey. mystery. I know it don't last. I know it don't last. I know it don't last.
I mean, in that respect, I agree with you. I mean, I'm someone who's pro psychedelic mindsets, and just altered states through whatever means, but responsibly and within context. But I've certainly explored the spaces, and I'm certainly a proponent of. I think that's a worthy, very worthy area to explore. But I do see. I don't want this to become like a just shitting on Kotzen moment, but that's one of my issues with the Winnipeg crowd is. I see if you watch them on, say, Facebook or Twitter, it's probably once a week that they're saying, hey, it's ceremony time, time to take ayahuasca. And my thing is, it's almost like an extreme version of what you just said about how many sinks do you need. It's almost that same thing. Like, do you need to be... Let's go back in time. Let's go into metaphor. Let's use metaphor to talk about. What's the guy? You know, funny thing happens on the road to Damascus. Paul, Saul, that dude, right? Right. So he's got his epiphany moment. He doesn't leave his finger in the electric socket. He has an epiphany. Oh, this is what my life is about. This is what I need to focus on. Now there's. You know, he might not be the greatest example, but just to say something like that. You see people like Philip K. Dick, where he leaves his finger in the socket a little bit longer and it starts to screw with him. Right? He has some of these, okay, brilliant visions. And then he leaves his finger in the socket and starts to throw him off. And he's not sure how to handle it. And you see this with any, and again, I'm pro psychedelics. I'm pro "quote unquote" drug in the larger sense of things, but you can also see burnout. Burnout is a real thing, and I think you're going to have a sink burnout where you are so hooked on the high, for lack of a better term, of "ooh, this connects to this," "ooh, this connects to this," "ooh, this connects to this." It's an endorphin rush. It's a joyful thing. But if you just leave your finger on the pleasure, you know, it's basically cutting open a hole in your brain, poking the pleasure center of your brain and going, ooh, it's all connected. Ooh, it's all connected. Ooh, it's all connected. Mm-hmm. Become a grunting ape. You don't become an enlightened master. You've devolved. And to me, there is a danger of that. You know, there's the idea of become as children does not mean become grunting idiots. So there's this, I think, a really, really, really fine line. And I would agree with you of, do you have to keep going into the pool? I remember the first time I took LSD and I sort of said, oh, I don't know if I ever need to do this again. I saw something that I never knew was there, and now I know it's there. Mm. I actually don't know if I... Now, of course, I have done it again. You know, I am a hypocrite. I am human. But, you know, I just remember that was such a vivid thing of like, oh, I see. Well, that's done. That's okay. It's not that I had all the answers, but I got the experience, right? I connected to something. I now know it's there. So do we have to keep doing that? And I actually, some of my most profound moments of, like, for lack of a better term, like true Gnostic, transcendent, connected moments came at the very early onset of my sync interests, where I feel like just changing my brain enough to be open to the possibilities instead of being just purely left brain, egoic mind, and just realizing, oh, the world is made of possibilities. Man, my brain exploded. I had gone to Japan, and, you know, I would have these things where I would, like, start dreaming in Japanese. But the minute I became aware that I was doing it, I would lose it, and it would become gibberish again. And that's, again, so the egoic mind steps in and is like trying to intellectualize it. You've screwed it up. You've ruined it. And I would have, I mean, I, to the point where I got winning lottery numbers, was understanding foreign languages. This was a very short-lived and like flashes of transcendence and breaking through that I was just talking to a friend of mine the other day, this guy Guillaume, who does a lot of like webmastering for the website. I was talking to him and we were talking about the whole, you know, this is 2010, it's only 5 years out. And I said, like, I feel like I've lost touch with who I was then, with that, like, everything was wonderful and possible and new possibilities. And holy shit, what's happened? What is happening to me? And what are these weird transcendent experiences? That was the liminal state. And you define it as a sort of initiation state, a crossing over point. Man, I experienced that hardcore. And now I'm just sort of this like grumpy old man who's saying like, hey, on this side of the bridge, if you want to come over here, these are some of the things you might want to know.
Well, I can relate to that. I'm not sure if we have the same point of view, because I'm not sure what your point of view is about that past phase of transcendence and whatnot, and even sounds like you were developing CDs and whatnot. But anyway, I also have... I can look back on... what am I now? I've got 48, coming up 48, so 15 years ago or more, about 15 years ago, where I was really peaking into, and I was doing a lot of psychedelics and having the most unbelievable dreams and so on and so forth. And yeah, that was a kind of peak time for me in terms of transcendental consciousness and self-empowerment, as compared to now, where I feel very much reduced and very, very disillusioned. But, and here's the big but, you know, you talk about Saturn. Saturn's always coming up with sink heads, it seems. Saturn's credo is real is better. Real is good. It doesn't matter if you like it or you don't like it. What's real is what you want to move towards, what you have to move towards, otherwise I'm going to hit you with my stick, right? That's Saturn, not me speaking. And so that, I mean, to the extent that I've become more Saturnian, more accepting of my own Saturnian nature, I understand, I accept that where I'm at now, even though it's much more disillusioned, feels much less powerful, much less transcendental, much more ordinary, it's better, it's more real, it's more embodied. I'm closer to actually to what I want to be, really. I think that this is kind of the crux of what we're talking around here. To me, you're talking about the Winnipeg community, you're talking about Reality Sandwich community, and, you know, any other number of communities or sub-communities or movements, you name it. But within the general, the alternate perceptions community, the larger sort of subculture, that I would say, without exception, it's all about making life more interesting, making it more exciting, making it more glamorous, filling it with archetypes or alien abductions or synchronicities or psychedelic, you know, shamanic visionary journeys, whatever it is, it makes life more exciting. And I this is a mental pursuit, in my opinion, just as the pursuit of happiness is. It's not that different from the pursuit of happiness of capitalism, it's just that it's in the subculture. And as I say, put those six guys on an island, they would create the same civilization because they have the same imprint to pursue happiness, the illusion of happiness, the mental construct of happiness, which, at the risk of repeating myself, not today, but in general, relates to dissociation, like art, the way that we've been trained and conditioned through trauma or through just bad parenting, to be happy, to have some semblance of joy, where we can't actually just experience real visceral joy of being embodied, is through dissociative states. And so I think that these movements and these disciplines and these areas of research, they very quickly get co-opted, and I would say even literally, like, I'll send you some links maybe to Williamson's Bainbridge, but he writes about audience cults and how the military and the intelligence, how they look for and they find little movements, just like synchromysticism or SyncBot, just, you know, that you're involved with, or the Kotzis in Winnipeg, and certainly Reality Sandwich, no doubt that that's been co-opted in my mind. And they infiltrate them because they're useful. They're useful ways to gather information, to seed memes, to influence people. And this happens, you know, that is a sort of grosser materialization of something that I think is already happening at the subtle level of the psychology of the individuals, that we get together and we reinforce our worst tendencies, which is to dissociate, to create fantasy realms, to feed those tulpas, and to build something that seems beautiful. I mean, you mentioned the kingdom before, and I was like, well, I've got to get back to that, because what kingdom are we talking about? We do it, you know, it happens, and it does get co-opted, and then we find ourselves, yeah, we're in this kingdom, and actually it's not, you know, the kingdom that we want is not of this world.
Wanderer of the stars, nothing in your night has froze. Goodbye, Oslo Rose.
This has been the first part of my conversation with Alan Green. You can listen to the second and final part of the conversation 3 days from now on Wednesday, the 18th of March.
One roar of the stars, this fate, and so it goes. Goodbye, Oslo Rose. One roar of the stars, nothing in your night did close. Goodbye, Oslo Rose. Stars, nothing in your night has froze. Goodbye, Oslo Rose. One roar of the stars, of all the things you chose. Goodbye, Oslo Rose. One roar of the stars, nothing in your night did close. Goodbye, Oslo Rose.